example, looking at Majjhima 88 Bahitika, which is actually one of the least substantial suttas in the whole of the Majjhima Nikaya, and a conversation between Ananda and Pasen. Bahitika, the title being a little slightly controversial, related to the word Bahu, Baha, Bahi, or something, which is the meaning external or something, and understood either as meaning a cloak from a foreign cloak, an imported cloak, or a cloak which covers everything, which wraps around your outside. And this particular one, only one corresponding discourse in the Majjhima Agama, Majjhima MA 214. Last of I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jetis Gravanatha Pindika's park. It was morning, Venerable Ananda dressed, went to Savatthi for alms, and went back to the eastern park to the palace of Megara's mother for the day's abiding. One of the second most famous. On that occasion, King Pasenadi of Kosala had mounted the elephant Eka Pundarika, one lotus elephant, and was riding out from Savatthi at midday. He saw Venerable Ananda coming in the distance and asked the minister Sirivardha, "That is the Venerable Ananda, is it not?" "Yes, sir, that's the Venerable Ananda." Then King Pasenadi told the man, "Come, my man, go to the Venerable Ananda and pay homage in my name with your head at his feet, and then say this: Venerable sir, if the Venerable Ananda has no urgent business, perhaps he would wait a moment out of compassion." "Yes, sir," the man replied. He did so. Ananda consented in silence. Sanity went up to him and then invited him to go to the bank of the river Achiravati out of compassion. The Venerable Ananda consented in silence. He went to the bank of the river Achiravati, sat down at the root of a tree on a seat made ready. Ananda went to him again and he said to Ananda, "Here, Venerable sir, is an elephant rug. Let the Venerable Ananda be seated on it." And Ananda replied, "There is no need, great king, sit down, I'm sitting on my own mat." So of course, an elephant rug is not a rug made out of an elephant or in the shape of an elephant, but a rug which is used when one is sitting on an elephant, and being something which is unallowable according to Vinaya, and mentioned sealers of the Digha Nikaya as well. Presumably it was, I'm not quite sure why it was unallowed, but I presume if you're riding on an elephant, you'd probably want a pretty thick, soft, mat thing. Because I mentioned it's a bit, a bit rough, riding around on an elephant all day. I don't know, but that's what I was all I can say. So up until now, Nalio in his essay on it simply notes there's some differences in the protocol. It seems a bit, the whole introduction to this seems a bit kind of heavy-handed. He says Ananda sending the man and then blah, 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 back and forth and so on. And some differences in the way it's presented in the Chinese version. Anyway. Venerable King Pasenadi sat down and said, "Venerable Ananda, would the Blessed One behave with the body in such a way that he would be censured by recluses and Brahmins?" Great King, the Blessed One would not behave with the body in such a way that he would be censured by recluses or Brahmins. What about would he behave with the speech or with the mind in a way, such a way? No, he wouldn't. And Sanity then says, "It's wonderful, it's marvelous that you could answer in such a way, because we were unable to accomplish with a question what has been accomplished by Venerable Ananda with the answer to the question." Quite sure what that means. "We do not recognize anything of value in the praise and blame of others spoken by foolish, ignorant persons who speak without having investigated and evaluated, but we recognize as valuable the praise and blame of others spoken by wise, intelligent, and sagacious persons who speak after having investigated and evaluated." Okay, so this is all a bit somewhat obscure, why King Pasenadi is However, it perhaps is explained by the commentarial explanation of the background to the story. And according to the Pali commentary, the inquiry and discussion was related to the murder of the female wanderer, Sundari. And there's a discourse in the Udana that teaches this incident in detail. According to the Udana, that narrated that other wanderers had wanted to discredit the Buddha, for which purpose they had asked the female wanderer Sundari to visit the Jetta's Grove on several occasions. When they knew that this had become public knowledge, they killed Sundari and buried her in Jetta's Grove. When her body was discovered, the other wanderers went around town accusing the Buddhist monks of having taken their pleasure with Sundari and then killed her. People believed this defamation and started to revile the monks. The Buddha thereupon instructed the monks to react to such abuse by pronouncing a verse on the evil destiny of one who makes false allegations and of those who deny a misdeed they have done. It served its purpose. Perhaps this then explains the nature of the conversation here to some degree, that they're talking about the praise and blame of foolish, ignorant persons. Now that's not worth listening to. Pasenadi goes on. What kind of bodily behavior is censured? So having asked whether it's Buddha would actually do anything which is censured, he then goes on to say, well, what is it that's worth censuring? And Ananda says, any bodily behavior that is blameworthy. And the next bit is of this preview, but in the text it says, what is kind of bodily behavior is blameworthy? Any bodily behavior that brings affliction, great king. What kind of bodily behavior brings affliction? Any bodily behavior that has painful results. What kind of bodily behavior has painful results? Any bodily behavior that leads to one's own affliction, the affliction of others, or the affliction of both, on account of which unwholesome states increase and wholesome states diminish. Such bodily behavior is censured by wise recluses and Brahmins, great king. So this giving a fairly normal explanation of good and bad conduct, and very similar to the definition of what is kusala or akusala, and it's usually explained in Buddhist texts as being primarily about the effects or the results of things. So this being a characteristic of moral discourse in Buddhism, that rather than referring to something being good because it has the intrinsic nature of being good, which is one way of defining something which is good. So, for example, from a Platonic perspective, then one might argue that there's an inherently existing form or ideal of what is good, and the good things approximate to that ideal, so that they're good in their very nature. Whereas Buddhism always adopts a causal explanation of things. It's good because it brings about good results, or it's bad because it brings about bad results. And Bhikkhu Bodhi's note on this little passage is worth looking at. He says, briefly, this passage offers five criteria of evil actions. Unwholesomeness, akusala, underscores the psychological quality of the action, its unhealthy effect upon the mind. It's being blameworthy underscores its morally detrimental nature. Its capacity to produce painful results calls attention to its undesirable karmic potential. And the last statement calls attention to both its evil motivation and the harmful long-range consequences such action entails for one, both oneself and others. And of course, the opposite applies to good action. And the same explanation given for verbal behavior and mental behavior, and the reverse for the good. So that's essentially the body of the sutta is simply giving this analysis of what's wholesome and what's unwholesome. And remember that this is also regarded by the Buddha as being one of the criteria for even like a basic spiritual path, like when he criticizes certain of the other ascetics and teachers around the place, such as Sanjaya Velatiputta, that one of the things is that they can't even explain what is good and what is bad. They don't even understand that much. So this, for the Buddha, being a very kind of very basic part of. Okay, so Sanity asks, now, Venerable Ananda, does the Blessed One praise only the undertaking of all wholesome states? The Tathagata Great King, says Ananda, has abandoned all unwholesome states and possesses wholesome states. Which doesn't quite answer, but then asks in the Madhyama Agama instead is, what is the reason why the Buddha did not undertake? Okay, so Sanity goes on, it is wonderful, Venerable Sir, it is marvelous how well that has been expressed by the Venerable Ananda. And we are satisfied and pleased by what has been so well expressed by him. Venerable Sir, we are so satisfied and pleased with what has been so well satisfied that if the elephant treasure were available to me, then we would give it to him. Sorry, if the elephant treasure were allowed to him, we would give it to him. If the horse treasure were allowed to him, we would give it to him. Notice the use of the royal we here. And if the boon of a village were allowed to him, we would give it to him. But we know, Venerable Sirs, that these are not allowable for the Venerable Ananda. So the elephant treasure and the horse treasure being two of the treasures, special treasures of a wheel-turning king. Kind of a little slightly excessive because he'd stop being the king if he gave that, if he actually was a wheel-turning king. But in the Madhyama Agama version, it just mentions an ordinary elephant or horse, which seems a bit more reasonable, and also says he would give them cattle, sheep, women, and gold if he were able to accept them. And as usual, women being mentioned in a list of possessions along with cattle, sheep. After. Sorry, do you have any problems with that? Alright. Okie dokie. Then, he says, okay, you can't have any of those things, but here is this cloak of mine, Venerable Sir, which was been sent to me packed in a royal umbrella case by King Ajatasattu of Magadha. 16 hands long and 8 hands wide, that the Venerable Ananda accepted out of compassion. It is not necessary, great king, my triple robe is complete. So, it's interesting to, as a point of monastic etiquette, to notice this is quite a common interchange in the Sutta Vinaya dialogue, and it shows that, you know, it's not always necessary to receive everything which is offered to you, and it's often felt these days in monastic etiquette that whatever's often you have to receive it because you don't want people to be upset by that, by not accepting it. But here, if his robe is complete, he says that's not necessary, so he doesn't take it. Interesting that the cloth or the cloak, which is just a gift from one king to another, should have been felt acceptable as a gift to the Sangha as well. And also kind of interesting that it was given by Ajatasattu, because Ajatasattu and Sanity were at war at various times, and so here they seem to have been trying to get along a little bit better. Venerable Sir, says Ananda, this river Achiravati has been seen both by the Venerable Ananda. This river Achiravati has been seen both by the Venerable Ananda and by ourselves. When a great cloud has rained heavily on the mountains, then this river Achiravati overflows both its banks. So too, Venerable Sir, the Venerable Ananda can make a triple robe for himself out of this cloak, and he can share out his old triple robe among his companions in the holy life. Way our offering will overflow, Venerable Sir, let the Venerable Ananda accept the cloak. Then the Venerable Ananda accepted the cloak. said, well, we're busy now, I have many to do, much to do, so the king went off and left. And Ananda went and told the Buddha what had happened and presented the cloak to the Buddha. Then Blessed One addressed the bhikkhus, it is a great gain for King Prasenadi that he had the opportunity to see and pay. It seems to me a little bit repetitive here. Body behavior that leads to one's own affliction of others, affliction of both. Yeah, I would say what the difference is that leads to one's own affliction, leads to affliction of others, leads to affliction of both. Tasa akusala dhamma abhivadati kusala dhamma parihayanti. I would guess that's referring to that you do an act with a bad act, and that leads to a painful result, but it also leads to the tendency to repeat and do more bad acts in the future. Yeah. So the affliction is more like the direct result, but it's also this is what they call in the Abhidhamma they call the sevana paccaya. It's the tendency of wholesome dhammas to condition more wholesome dhammas. I'm not sure that would be counted under the affliction Mahitika Sutta. So unless anyone has any great objections, I might move on to the Dhammacetiya Sutta, which is much more interesting. But just as a little bit of an interim before starting that, I just thought I might refer a little bit. So we've been having, there's a few discourses here. We've actually got a series of about three or four discourses that are dealing with King Prasenadi. And for those of you interested in Prasenadi and his character, there's a whole bunch of other discourses about him in the Kosala Samyutta of the Sagatavaga, which I won't go through all of them, but you get quite a nice kind of broad sort of conception of Prasenadi's character and different kind of duties and so on as a king, and his kind of failures and successes and so on and so forth. But one of my favourite ones, I'll just read one of my favourite ones because I just found another version of it in the Chinese source. So it's interesting to compare these two versions, but this is one called A Bucket Measure of Food. I think I've referred to this a number of times. Now, on that occasion, King Prasenadi had eaten a bucket measure of rice and curries. Now, while still full, huffing and puffing, the king approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down at one side. And the Buddha said to him the verse, when a man is always mindful, knowing moderation in the food he eats, his ailments then diminish, he ages slowly, guarding his life. Now on that occasion the Brahmin youth Sudassana was standing behind King Prasenadi. The king addressed him thus, come now, dear Sudassana, learn this verse from the Blessed One and recite it to me whenever I am taking my meal. I'll then present you daily with 100 kahapanas as a perpetual grant. Yes, sire, the Brahmin youth Sudassana replied. Well, that's fairly easy living. And so every time he had his meal, he said the verse, when a man is always mindful, knowing moderation in the food he eats, his ailments then diminish, he ages slowly, guarding his life. King Prasenadi gradually reduced his intake of food to at most a pint pot measure of boiled rice. At a later time, when his body had become quite slim, King Prasenadi stroked his limbs with his hand. On that occasion, uttered this inspired utterance, the Blessed One showed compassion towards me in regard to both kinds of good, the good pertaining to the present life and that pertaining to the future life. So that's the world's first weight loss diet ever, which is pretty good, isn't it? And the thing I think that's most remarkable about that is that after all of these years and research and magazines and everything, no one's come up with a better one. Yeah? Yeah? Don't eat too much. And that's about as good as it gets, you know? Exactly, the moral support of others, yeah. Yeah. It's very good if you can pay for that moral support. Yeah. But in a sense, that's what people do, isn't it? I mean, if you join Weight Watchers or something, you basically, because you're investing in it, then you do it. But I was quite amused when I came across the version of that in here. Now, this is a translated with the eloquent and poetic title, The Scriptural Text Verses of the Doctrine with Parables, which really gives you a good idea. It's actually a Chinese Dhammapada. So it's a Dhammapada together with the Dhammapada stories. The ones found in the Chinese canon and translated in this excellent series by the Numata Foundation, who are gradually translating the whole Tripitaka, the emphasis on the word gradual. And this has actually, it's got sort of retellings and versions of a lot of very familiar stories from the suttas and so on, but it has this retelling of this one. So I'll just read through this one, and it's interesting to see how it gets retold in a later form. Once the Buddha was at Sravasti, expounding the doctrine and making conversions, gods and dragons, demons and spirits, and the ruler and the people went to listen at three moments. I guess that means in the three periods of the day. The king at this time was called Prasenajit. As a man, he was arrogant and given to pleasure. His eyes were deluded by lust, and his ears were confused by sounds. His nose was attracted to fragrances, his mouth was unrestrained about the five flavors, and his body was conditioned to subtle, smooth things. His food and drink were extremely fine, but he never had enough of them, so food was often presented to him as he was constantly suffering from hunger. The delicacies of his kitchen did not satiate his constant hunger. He became fat and was even unable to ride in a carriage. Whether lying down or standing up, he was so short of breath. His breath was obstructed and his breathing interrupted, which constantly alarmed him. He was groaning, whether sitting or standing, and constantly suffered from the weight of his own body. He could not turn aside. He considered his body to be a calamity. So he ordered a stately chariot and went to where the Buddha was. While his attendants supported him, he made inquiries, withdrew, and sat down, his hands folded together. He said to the Buddha, "World-honored one, from a great distance, I have humbly come to visit you, asking your counsel free from any procedure. I do not know what my crime is that my body has become so bloated. I myself cannot perceive why I have become so. I constantly suffer from it. And that's why I haven't been here to visit you more often." And the Buddha informed the great king, "There are five things that make a person corpulent," which means fat. 1. Frequent meals. 2. Fondness for sleep. 3. Merriment. 4. Absence of grief. That's kind of an interesting one, but I think it's quite true. When you're grieving and so on, people tend to get to lose weight. If you're always happy, jolly people, you know. But do you get fat? But it probably proves some people do. Anyway, that's what it says. And 5, uneventfulness. Nothing's happening. You get complacent and lazy. These are the 5 things, and being fond of them makes one corpulent. If one does not want to be fat, one will become lean, having diminished one's food and not caring for it. Thereupon, the world-honored one spoke the stanza. One must always be mindful. At each meal, no frugality. Accordingly, one's painful needs will diminish, and moderation preserves life. So that being clearly a translation of exactly the same verse that we've got in the Pali. When the king heard the stanza, his joy was immeasurable. He immediately called his cook and informed him, "Remember the recitation of this stanza at mealtime. Expound this stanza to me before serving the meal." The king took his leave and returned to the palace. When the cook offered a meal, he expounded the stanza. When the king heard the stanza, he was glad, and he diminished his meal a spoonful each day. As his meals diminished little by little, his body consequently became lighter, and he eventually became as lean as before. And then he was happy and remembered the Buddha. He stood up, he walked to where the Buddha was, and paid respects. And the Buddha said, "Oh, why didn't you come in your carriage? Why did you come on foot?" And the king said to the Buddha, "I've carried out the instructions that you gave me and have now become lighter through your power, world-honored one. That is why I've come on foot. You know what is best." And the Buddha told the king, "People in the world are so ignorant about impermanence. They keep desiring all their lives long, not thinking about performing merit. When someone's died, the spirit leaves and the body remains in the grave. The wise nurture their spirits and the foolish ones nurture their bodies. If you can understand this, then respectfully carry out the noble teaching. Thereupon the world-honored one again spoke the stanzas. And some more verses here. As man is impermanent, he ages as does an ox. He just grows and becomes fatter without getting any wisdom. Birth and death are wearisome, and coming and going are distressing. As one intently covets the body, one experiences unending suffering. The wise know suffering and thereby reject the body. They extinguish bad thoughts and do away with desire. When their craving has ended, they are free from rebirth. When the king had heard the stanzas, he was glad and readily understood the meaning. And they then became intent on starting on the unsurpassed right path. Those who had been listening were countless, and they all became stream enterers. Version. So just giving that as just one example of how the stories get told and retold in different versions, and the typical kinds of elaborations that the